Welcome to Australian Women Preach, a podcast that aims to raise women's voices in preaching the gospel. Our intention is to model the church we want to be, inclusive, diverse, and welcoming. Brought to you by WATAC, Women and the Australian Church, and The Grail in Australia. Michelle Eastwood is a Director of Research at Australian Lutheran College. She has degrees in psychology, history, education and theology. Michelle is a Hebrew Bible scholar and is interested particularly in the areas of gender and sexuality, worship and liturgy, and literary readings of the Bible. She lives and works on Wadawurrung country and will be voting yes in the upcoming referendum. And a warning: this episode contains references to sexual assault, which may be distressing to some people.
Hi. Today I'll be thinking about the reading from Matthew chapter 10, verses 26 to 33. When I looked up this passage in the NRSV updated edition, it has a subtitle, Whom to Fear. Now, I'm aware that these subheadings are not in the original text, but I think this provides an interesting insight into how this text might be interpreted. To put it in context, at the start of this chapter, Matthew has named the 12 and recorded the instructions for their mission. The instructions include warnings that their message will not be welcome everywhere and that they will face trouble along the way. And the section I'm thinking about today starts with the word so. These instructions are about fear, are in direct response to the persecution that the 12 can expect to face, which Matthew has just explained to us. And in contrast to the heading Whom to Fear, these verses say that the 12 should have no fear. Have no fear because all that is uncovered will be revealed. Verse 27 says, What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light, and what you have whispered, proclaim from the rooftops. This has me thinking about things that are said in the dark or that might only be whispered. In my mind, a picture emerges of fireside conversations where truths are revealed that often are not shared at other times. In the dark, it is easier to express vulnerability and speak about our shame. I remember a moment many years ago speaking about the shame I carried with regard to an earlier experience of sexual assault. In the morning, the person who I told lorded it over others in our group that I'd shared something so intimate with her and not with them. This left me in a really vulnerable position, and I felt betrayed. This was the first time I had shared this story, but it was not the last time someone used this part of my story for their own purposes. Today, some 30 years after that event, I still take a deep breath before disclosing this part of my history. I recently watched the movie and reread the book of Women Talking. The movie is set in a Mennonite community where there have been a series of sexual assaults against women who've been tranquilized in their sleep. On telling their stories of injury, the women are told they are hysterical and making it up. Finally, one woman takes actions to reveal the identity of the rapist, who, when confronted, tells the name of his accomplices. This is based on a real story, and the men involved are still in jail. The women have to decide what their next course of action should be. They have a number of meetings held in the barn loft, where they talk about theology, forgiveness, community, and what the right course of action to take might be. What is spoken in the barn becomes the manifesto to leave the community in the early morning light. However, leaving is not without cost. Many of us have complicated relationships with our abusers, particularly when they are members of our family. Walking away does not erase the hurt or shame, and starting again never quite means starting with a clean slate. These women will carry the wounds of what happened to them in the dark. And how many stories have we heard in recent years about abuse, physical, sexual, and emotional, inside the church and outside? And many survivors have spoken about the cost of speaking out, the re-traumatization and re-victimization that occurs when our private, secret, shame-bearing stories are used for media fodder or denied by those in authority, or when we are told that we must have secretly wanted it or brought it on ourselves. And of course, until these stories are spoken out loud, we have no capacity to bring about justice or accountability, even remembering that there is very rarely justice for survivors or accountability for perpetrators. And the text says, Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. And I think about all those whose faith was destroyed by these incidents or by the reaction of people who were trusted to hear the story, or by the church who, even while moving abusers around, kept denying any form of acknowledgement of or compensation for the victims. The words feel very hollow. And I don't think this was what Matthew was thinking of or meaning. Scholars think this gospel was written prior to the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, so there was pressure from the state applied against Jewish people, and Matthew was a Jew. Matthew was also part of this new group that was planting the seeds of what became Christianity. He probably faced marginalization from other Jews and Jewish groups because he was moving away from the traditional position and into a new space, one that proclaimed Jesus as Messiah. What Matthew is hearing in the dark in this passage may be about the message of Jesus, a dangerous subversive killed by the state, but one who reinterpreted the scriptures through an ethic of love and God's justice. Matthew is probably encouraging his readers to be brave and vulnerable about what they have heard and witnessed. In contemporary language, he's probably telling them, speak the truth, even if your voice shakes. And their voices are likely to be shaking because there is likely to be uncomfortable, if not dangerous, consequences for speaking. Indeed, if Matthew is writing from a position of persecution, then he's more like one of the victims I spoke about earlier, who is bravely speaking the truth. But a couple of thousand years later, how often are these words spoken from a position of authority? What if we are the reason someone's voice shakes when they speak against what they've experienced at the hands of the church or of Christians? What if we, as the church or as Christians, are the ones that are killing the body, and I would argue also the soul? How does that change our reading of this text? In this week's lectionary, along with this text from Matthew, there are also readings from Psalm 69 and Jeremiah 20. The four chosen verses from Psalm 69, verses 8 to 10 and verse 14, speak of the psalmist as a victim of persecution because of their piety. The verses from Jeremiah, verses 10 to 13, are very similar. The people compiling the lectionary chose to put these three readings together. So when reading these verses with the reading from Matthew, we get a picture of ongoing persecution because of the writer's commitment to God's truth. And even today in Australia, you will hear rhetoric that says Christians are persecuted because of God's truth. This is the justification for the Religious Discrimination Bill, which doesn't so much protect Christians from discrimination, but gives them license to continue to discriminate. If we were seriously interested in religious discrimination, we might be concerned with ongoing anti-Semitism and anti-Muslim sentiments and behaviours. We'd have to think about how Christianity has and continues to deny the legitimacy of Indigenous understandings of God and spirituality, and was complicit in the destruction of Indigenous language and culture. We might have to think about how the LGBTIQA plus people who've reported their experiences of pain at the hands of Christians and churches in Australia. Matthew warns that the message he is spreading will not be welcome everywhere. Today, the message of treating queer people as people is not welcome everywhere, particularly in church circles. The message of respect and love for our Muslim sisters and brothers is not welcome everywhere, especially in some churches. Criticism about the way certain Christian teaching promotes anti-Semitic sentiment has not been well received. Rather, it's often excused by claims that it is included in the Bible. The respectful inclusion of an acknowledgement of or welcome to country at the beginning of worship services and the right for Indigenous people to have a constitutionally recognised voice in these lands where their sovereignty was never ceded is not always a welcome message. In my experience, these groups who make up small minorities of people in Australia can be seen as a threat to the Christian faith. This line of argument goes that if we accept others into Christian community, they might somehow dilute the purity of our faith. If we accept others into our Christian circles, they might ask us to change our worship practices to include them. If we accept others into our lives, they might encourage us to consider other perspectives when we're reading the text. Change is difficult. Change can be threatening, and one way to counter the threat of change is to insist that our understanding, our ways of worship, our faith is the right way. I call this the purity impulse, and we certainly see it in the Bible. In 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, we hear about Josiah, who leads a series of reforms designed to return the Israelites to proper worship. In Daniel chapter 3, we hear the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would rather burn in the fire than compromise on their beliefs. And there are plenty of tales of foreign wives who bring their foreign religions and turn the Israelite men astray. If we are looking for a justification not to change and to insist on a pure understanding of God, there are certainly biblical texts that will encourage us to do just that. However, there are also texts that speak of inclusion. The phrase, "Remember you were slaves and that God redeemed you, therefore do as I command," is usually accompanied by a message of inclusion. Include the slaves in your family. Include the foreigners in your communities. Include the destitute in your consideration of food security. The purity strand sits alongside the inclusion strand, and I believe the greater biblical witness encourages us to hold the two in balance, or perhaps in tension. But let's come back to where we started, with the subtitle for this section, Whom to Fear. We all have fears. We all have stories of times when people have hurt us. We all have secret shames that we carry and perhaps only speak of in the dark. And many victims of abuse have to disclose their experiences multiple times before being believed or taken seriously. Being disbelieved can mean we go back into the darkness of the proverbial closet and don't speak again. I certainly did, but it keeps coming out one way or another. Bringing our fears, our hurts, and our shames into the light make us vulnerable. And it's tempting to counter the vulnerability with certainty. It's tempting to insist on lines of exclusion that will keep us pure and safe. It's tempting to push down the difficult stories of abuse and mistreatment, particularly when they implicate someone or something that we love, in favour of a narrative that says if we just do the right thing, we will be okay. If we can stay pure, we'll be protected. Of course, doing the right thing can mean dismissing the witness of oppressions in which we are sometimes complicit. So I don't hear Matthew saying in this text that we should not fear. I don't hear him saying that we will always be protected. Rather, I hear him saying, speak the truth, even if your voice shakes, because the only way justice has a chance to survive is if it moves from being whispered in the dark into being spoken in the light. Amen.
You have been listening to Australian Women Preach, brought to you by WATAC, Women and the Australian Church, and The Grail in Australia. You can find out more about WATAC at watac.net.au and The Grail at grailaustralia.org.au. The music in this podcast is from the song Truth, from the album Into Silence, by songwriter, musician, theologian and teacher Danielle Ann Lynch. You can hear the full version on Spotify.